Like, I was always a kid that loved those storybooks, like the choose-your-own-adventure kind of storybooks. That's what I think people really like about D&D. That's what I really like about D&D, at least, because you do really get to just choose your own adventure even more freely than those books allowed you to do. It's so different in that you get to craft your own experience and see both the good and ugly of that.
What used to be considered only nerd culture is now popular culture. Science fiction, fantasy, and other genres have taken over Hollywood, television, the internet, and in many cases, the creators of these pieces of popular culture cite playing Dungeons & Dragons as key to their ability to tell the stories that have turned into multi-million dollar businesses. This is Random Acts of Knowledge, presented by Heartland Community College. I'm your host, Steve Fast. Today, we're going to talk about the game that was a spark for so many elements of popular culture today, Dungeons & Dragons, and let you know how you can get involved in playing what has become the most popular role-playing experience in the world.
My name is Jessie Birkelbaugh. I've been at Heartland for just over 2 years now. In that two-year span, I've worked at the testing center the whole time.
Tell me a little bit about what they do at the testing center at Heartland Community College.
In my current role, what I do for the most part is kind of like professional certification testing through a third-party vendor called Pearson View. They're a huge education company. They do a lot of textbooks and online resources, things like that too, but also certification, you know, like GED, high school equivalency, a lot of tech certification, stuff like that. So I'm kind of the site manager for Pearson View and our Pearson View testing, so I handle all that. And then I also work really heavily with our course testing students and with our faculty. So all of their testing requests come through me. I kind of process those, make sure we've got everything that students and faculty need and what we need for the testing center. And then we administer those for thousands of course testers every semester. So that's kind of the bulk of my job at the moment.
And what will you be doing with this continuing education class?
This summer will be my first time teaching with continuing education. I'm super excited to get started. I'm going to be teaching Intro to Dungeons and Dragons to a couple different age groups. So first, for the kind of Summer Kids Academy, I'm doing a course for 6 through 8 students and then 9 through 12. And then a little bit later in the summer, later in July, I'll do three different sessions, kind of 2 hours and three consecutive weeks for adults. So with that one, I'll be able to get a little bit more in-depth, but the kids' sessions are 3 hours each, so it'll be a little bit more kind of rapid fire going through the basics. But the purpose of the course is just to kind of get students feeling comfortable with Dungeons & Dragons, you know, expose them to it if they haven't had any experience with it before, and then just go through it kind of start to finish so that they leave ready to go join a D&D group and play their first adventure.
How long have you been playing Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah, so let's see. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons since I met my husband, so about 4 years now. He is a huge nerd, so he turned me on to D&D, and I kind of latched onto it very quickly. So I started as a player in a campaign, and that lasted for a couple months, and then I decided, okay, like, I've got a good handle on this. I want to run the game now. I've always been kind of a storyteller. I really like creative writing. In high school, I would just write all the time, same through college, and that's one of the things I really like about D&D, especially when you are running the game, is it's collaborative storytelling. So that's kind of what pulled me into actually running it then for my friends. So I started my first campaign about 3 years ago, ran that for 6 to 8 months, I think, somewhere in there. And then that kind of fizzled out on its own, as campaigns often do. And then I started running a different campaign for that same group. And we now have kind of a rotating system where we all sort of take turns running the game. That way everybody gets to be a player as well. So I both run and play in D&D right now with my friend group.
So if you run the game, you're the dungeon master, right?
Yes.
And so is a game basically just as good as the dungeon master?
I would say it's as good as the dungeon master and the players can work together. Because it is collaborative storytelling, right? So it's easy to fall into this kind of common trope where the dungeon master is really doing all of the work and the players are just kind of there. In my opinion, that's not a good game. If you have fun in that game, no judgment. If that works for your group, fabulous. For my group, we like to work together a lot, so we are frequently collaborating between Dungeon Master and player, even in session. You know, we'll have like a little breakout and kind of talk things through. But we frequently plan things together, kind of, you know, craft the story together, things like that. And that's how we really like to play, because then it feels, I guess, just more inclusive and more collaborative with the whole group.
Imagine that I'm somebody that doesn't know anything about Dungeons & Dragons. I've heard the term, but I have no familiarity with it at all, which I'm guessing most of the people that are coming to your class have some familiarity or at least interest. But how would you explain the game to somebody that doesn't really know what it is?
Yeah. D&D is a game of make-believe that you play with friends, coworkers, really anyone. If you are a player, you will create your own character. So, for example, say you want to play Legolas from Lord of the Rings, you might create yourself a elf ranger that is really proficient with bows, and then you'll kind of determine the things that you want your character to be good and bad at. It's very important to make well-rounded characters. You should have things you're good at. You should have things that you're terrible at. That makes the game interesting. And then the Dungeon Master is going to create a world or pull on, there's a lot of material that's already published for Dungeon Masters to just hop right into. Many people like to create kind of their own world and do it that way. But the Dungeon Master will do that. They will put your character and the characters of the other party members in a situation and then just kind of let you do what you want to do. You know, it's very common for players to meet in a tavern and then they get to know each other and then there will be some sort of plot hook. You know, maybe somebody runs into the tavern with a big cut on their arm and they need help right away. Something like that will happen and that'll kind of spur your group to action and then it just snowballs from there and suddenly you have this 6-month long adventure with your friends.
So where do the rules come into play when you are creating your character and, you know, putting your character into action? So let's just say I want to create a character that is the strongest man in the world and can defeat any monster, et cetera. Well, that wouldn't be a very good game because you just win every time. So there must be some sort of parameters on the rules of what you can and can't do. How does that come into play when you're creating a character?
Yeah, so when you're doing character creation, you have 6 different attribute scores and a set number of points you can allocate to each. So the current attribute scores are strength, dexterity, constitution. Those are your physical stats. And then you have wisdom, intelligence, and charisma. Those are the mental stats. You know, with your example of like the strongest person in the world, you would probably put a lot of points into strength and maybe fewer points into dexterity. You know, they're very strong, maybe not so agile. And then you, because there's only a certain number of points that you can put total on a certain character, then if you say put 17 points into strength, that's going to mean you have fewer points to put into dexterity, your mental stats, etc. So the example you described is kind of similar to a barbarian build. That's one of the classes in D&D. Those characters typically tend to be very heavy on their physical stats, high strength, high constitution. So they can be, you know, this big, beefy tank kind of character. And then they might not be so adept when they get into, say, like a social situation where they have to navigate a political landscape or talk to nobility, things like that. And when you are in those situations as the player, you're going to be making some skill checks. So you'll be rolling a 20-sided die that kind of simulates randomness in the situation. And so if you score high on that die, then you're going to succeed. If you score low, you may not succeed, and there may be consequences to that. But then depending on your attribute scores, you'll have a bonus that you add to that die roll. So say if you're rolling a check to, you know, break down a wall, your very strong character might have a +5 bonus because they're very good at strength. If you are trying to persuade someone to, you know, let you into the noble's castle, you might have a negative, like a penalty to that roll because you're not very good at charisma. So that's kind of where it comes to play when you transition from character creation to actual gameplay.
At least as far as I can remember, I'm sure that there were these types of games before Dungeons & Dragons came on the scene, which I believe it was like in the 70s that Dungeons & Dragons first emerged.
Yep.
This was something that probably at the time, it takes that extra step. You get a Monopoly game, and there's a set of rules, they're there, and some similarities, there's dice that determine, you know, actions. But this was something that requires so much more from the players themselves. Mm-hmm. What is it about this role-playing game element and Dungeons & Dragons in particular with this set of kind of world building that there's certain things that you're going for? You're probably not going to have tanks or airplanes in a Dungeons & Dragons game. What is it about that really makes it unique?
I think there are a great many things that really make the game unique. And not just Dungeons & Dragons. There's a whole host of other TTRPGs, tabletop role-playing games out there, too. I think one thing that really grabs both players and Dungeon Masters is because there is kind of a high investment at the front, then that makes you invested as you go through, right? You know, in the back of your mind, you might be thinking about how much time you've put into this, and it makes you care about it. It makes you want to keep playing. Whereas, you know, like with a game of Monopoly, you kind of just sit down at maybe Thanksgiving after you've eaten a big meal, you play a round of Monopoly, and then you're done. But this is a much more engaging and kind of invested experience. And because it's something that you share so vulnerably with other people, too, I think that kind of ties everyone in. And you share a common goal, and, you know, you all kind of want to work towards that. But I think it's just also so unique in that it gives people an escape that they don't find elsewhere. Because it's similar to reading, but different from reading, in that you're just seeing someone else's experience. With D&D, you're doing your own experience. You have control over that. You're making your own choices. You're reaping the consequences of your own choices and moving forward. It's, I mean, kind of same with like watching a TV show or something. It's so different in that you get to craft your own experience and see both the good and ugly of that. So I think that, at least for me, is what makes it so unique is I was always a kid that loved those storybooks where you could make your, like the choose your own adventure kind of storybooks. That's what I think people really like about D&D. That's what I really like about D&D, at least, because you do really get to just choose your own adventure even more freely than those books allowed you to do. And it can be so customizable, too. You, like you mentioned, you know, you probably don't have, like, tanks and airships and that kind of thing. There are games that are meant to do that. My group actually played in a game, it's called Lancer, where it's all about, like, piloting high-tech mechs and things like that. If you really like to get into sort of like religion and pantheon aspects, there's a kind of a spin-off of D&D called Godbound, where you play as like demigods. My group is actually playing in that one right now. My friend is running that for us, and it's really, really cool. So there's so many different options out there, too. So if the kind of standard, like, fantasy landscape isn't really what you're interested in, there are so many options, so many different systems for you to play in, too. So there's really a key for every lock when it comes to tabletop RPGs.
You know, you talk about the choose your own adventure element to it, and then I think that video gaming mm-hmm. in that way is so much bigger than, well, definitely bigger than when D&D first really became popular in the 80s. But for the younger people that you'll be teaching in this class, how is it different, and what does this kind of actually almost old-timey idea of some people sitting around a table with some dice and creating a story, how is that different, and what does it offer to people that maybe have only really been big into video games? Because there are those, you know, first-person video games with very advanced plots, and you have to solve puzzles and move forward to get to the next scene and all of that.
Yeah, I think one of the huge benefits is just that it disconnects you from technology for a little bit. You know, you can kind of take a step back in time a bit, and you're just sitting around a table with your friends. There are, of course, you know, technological resources that can be helpful. If you have, you know, laptop, phone, tablet, that can be useful for looking up information or seeing your character sheet. But for the most part, you're working with physical materials. You know, you've got miniatures, you've got dice, you've got battle maps on your table. So I think that physical component of it is just a very, very different feel than, you know, video gaming. But it also kind of challenges your mind in a different way, because you don't have things just playing out in front of you and you're interacting with the screen. You kind of have to create that for yourself. And then it gets interesting because the vision that you create in your mind is a little bit different from the person sitting to your right, and their vision is different from the person sitting across from them. So the way that you kind of craft this experience together makes it very, very unique.
When you think about the fact that D&D is a brand, something that has lasted this long, is still part of our popular culture. This is something that I remember that in the 80s, it was a very big deal. In fact, you know, there was a lot of conspiracies and worries over it, that it was involved with witchcraft or something, and that it was dangerous.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Then, I don't know if it's just nostalgia or what, but it's popped up a whole lot in popular culture over the last 10 years or so. And maybe that's because you have things like Stranger Things, where D&D is a big part of the plot point there because these are kids in the 80s playing D&D. But what do you think it is about D&D that has made it part of our 2000s pop culture?
That's a really great question. I honestly don't know. I think that there's a lot of theories for sure, because as you said, there are a lot of different sources that are now pulling from that. I think part of it is the rise of YouTube. YouTube has become much more popular since it was, you know, in like 2000s or so. And that has provided a platform for a lot of the nerdier creators, which has then led to more D&D content. And there are a lot of groups now that, you know, record D&D episodes on YouTube, publish those, have their own channels and all that stuff. Critical Role, Dimension 20, there's all sorts of them. They're very good, by the way. You should check them out. So I think kind of it's become more accessible to produce content for, you know, a wide variety of things, but I think for D&D especially. So I think that has just kind of naturally led to more content for D&D and given it more exposure. And then I think, like you said too, that nostalgia element of, you know, kind of revisiting something maybe you did in your childhood, things like that. I think that has definitely contributed as well. And I think we've had a little bit of just kind of a societal shift towards embracing our nerdier, more creative side, too. So it's become more of an accepted and encouraged even hobby. So I think that has let people kind of engage with it more, encouraged more engagement with it,
too. What do you learn from somebody YouTubing about their D&D campaign?
So there's a lot of variety out there. The two that I mentioned, Critical Role and Dimension 20, those are essentially D&D TV shows. Basically. So they record episodes. A lot of the people on those shows are like professional voice actors, things like that. So what you see on there is maybe not what your tabletop RPG experience is going to be. But it's really helpful just to kind of get a basis of knowledge for what you might expect in a D&D campaign or like, you know, what you can and can't do as a player. I know for me, I get a little bit of social anxiety, so playing in a group, you know, with everyone else could be a little bit daunting. I know it deters other people from playing D&D. So being able to visit those sources first and kind of get a little bit of context to put that in was really, really helpful for me. There are also a lot of great creators out there. Matthew Colville is one that creates videos not so much on how to play D&D, but how to run D&D. So Matt Colville is really how I learned to run the game. He has a whole series, like 300-something videos on his channel, all about running the game, kind of setting boundaries and balancing and all that kind of thing. So being able to listen to his videos, hear his experiences and guidance and everything is really what made it possible for me, and my husband also runs D&D. That's kind of what got us started in running and, you know, kind of keeps us going too. And it's just a really, really helpful way to be able to, again, put context to things. Because you, with a fantasy game, you inevitably encounter some wacky experiences, of course, you know. So it's helpful to have that source material to fall back on when you kind of get in a bind where you're like, oh my gosh, how on earth did we get to where we are? So it's a really great tool. But it's also kind of a good source of inspiration, too, to be able to develop our campaigns further, enhance player experience, and just have more fun as a group.
Well, and one other question about people that are in the beginner stage. Mm-hmm. What do you need to bring if you want to get started with this? Do you have to go out and have a certain number of books? And you probably need somebody that knows how to run a game, and you want to probably start as a participant as opposed mm-hmm. to trying to come up with it out of nowhere.
Sure.
But what do you need to start with?
Ideally, yes, it is good to start as a player. The great thing about the technology resources we have today is you can play D&D with zero physical materials now. There are a lot of free resources online. I have a like a dice rolling app on my phone that I use. So you can just roll dice that way. You don't even have to go out and buy physical dice. I would generally encourage it. I'm what's called a dice goblin, so I have like some 150 dice sitting in my basement.
Cause... Well, let's stop. I'm going to stop you right there. You know, I've seen this. So I don't play D&D, but, you know, I've grown up during its height and all that. So I have lots of friends who have. Why do you need that many dice?
Oh, you
What's
don't.
The difference in the dice? What is the value of having all the different dice?
Yeah, so it's definitely not a need. It's a want. I like to have kind of themed dice for the characters that I play. So right now I'm playing a character that does kind of like fire magic, things like that. But the fire that she creates is black and white rather than, like, you know, red, orange, yellow, etc. So I am in the process of finding the perfect set of kind of swirly black and white dice to match the character. Does not impact the game at all. It just makes my brain happy. That's really all it is. I don't know what it is, though. There is something about purchasing dice that is, like, addictive to a lot of people. That's where the term dice goblin was coined. And then there are other people who will buy a single set of dice or even no dice and just use, you know, some app on their phone. And that's what they'll use for years and years of playing D&D. Not me. But, yeah, there's really no benefit to having more dice, but it is fun.
Well, I certainly think that the action of having the dice and throwing the dice is probably better than something on the phone. Yeah. That way you can always blame someone for how they threw the dice as opposed to just the app. Okay, so what else do you need?
Ideally, you have someone in the group who knows the rules fairly well. However, I would say that is not necessary. I think one of the things that keeps people from playing D&D is that at first glance, it seems like a very rules-heavy game, and it can be. But you also really don't have to play it that way. The rules are there to guide you. They are not there to restrict you. So it's entirely possible to kind of take the shell, the concept of D&D, and just go play, and you're going to get things wrong, of course. You're going to do things that break the rules. But it doesn't matter. If you have fun with your group, that's the purpose of the game. So if you have fun playing D&D, you are playing D&D correctly. If you do want to follow the rules more, there are a lot of books that you can purchase. Wizards of the Coast is the company that owns Dungeons & Dragons, the game. They are owned by Hasbro. So you can purchase these nice books from them. They cost usually somewhere around like $30 a book. The one that people generally get started with is called the Player's Handbook. That has all of the like rules that you need for creating a character, you know, getting started in your first campaign, things like that. I would recommend that. You don't necessarily have to get a physical copy, though. If finances are a barrier, you can also just download PDFs online. I don't remember off the top of my head how much it costs to just download them from Wizards of the Coast, but it's significantly cheaper than getting like the nice hardback book, of course. And then there's a lot of free material available online as well, because D&D is collaborative by nature, a lot of people have created different material and published it online. A lot of it's free. A lot of it you can download for like a $1 donation to somebody's Patreon, you know, things like that. So there's a lot of free material out there, a lot of easily accessible material that you can just kind of explore when you have time. But you really don't need to. I encourage people to just get your feet wet, try the game. You don't have to know every rule. You don't even have to know most of the rules to actually just get started playing. And I really emphasize to balance it throughout your group. You know, if, say, for example, I know the rules of combat really well, and you know the rules of exploration really well, that's great. So when we get into combat, I can be kind of the rules police, and then when we get into exploring, you'll help guide us through. It's not like one person, even the Dungeon Master, it's not like one person has to know every single rule to be able to play the game well.
Jesse, thanks so much for joining us today, talking about Dungeons & Dragons and your upcoming courses. Hopefully you're going to find a bunch of new players who can dive into it and start their own groups or join an existing group.
Yeah, should be a good adventure.
Jesse Birkelbauer works at the Testing Center at Heartland Community College and is the instructor for the Introduction to Dungeons & Dragons course in the Continuing Education Department. If you're interested in more interviews about continuing education, creativity, and more, subscribe to Random Acts of Knowledge on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you found this one. Thanks for listening.